This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
Hello, snack lovers. Curb your cravings with My Mochi ice cream. Imagine a scoop of rich, creamy, premium ice cream in your favorite flavor. Now imagine that scoop wrapped up in the sweetest, softest dough known to mankind. That's My Mochi ice cream. Sweet, chewy, cool, and creamy, all in one bite. It's quite possibly the most joyfully chill sensation you've ever had in your life. My Mochi ice cream comes in tons of fabulous flavors like strawberry, mango, cookies and cream, and double chocolate. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned mochis that are about 80 calories each, and it's also gluten-free. You can find My Mochi at Target or visit MyMochi.com to find a grocery store near you. That's MyMochi.com. Discover the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Ion Travel Podcast with CBS News travel editor Peter Greenberg.
Hi, everybody. Peter Greenberg here, and welcome to another edition of the Ion Travel Podcast. I'll sit down with some legendary hoteliers and entrepreneurs to discuss the current state of the travel industry, starting with Chris Birch, who started in fashion. Does the name Tory Birch, his ex-wife, ring a bell? Then he branched out to hotels in Miami and way out in Malaysia. Then Matthew Upchurch, CEO of Virtuoso, the Luxury Travel Advisor Consortium, on some new and some not-so-new metrics in valuing the travel experience. And then Alan Furstman stops by. He's the founder, chairman, and CEO of Montage Hotels, with some of his new definitions of old luxury, as well as a few of his pet peeves with hotels. First up, Chris Birch.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Chris Birch, welcome.
Thanks, Peter. Great to be here.
I mean, when we talk about luxury travel, you've seen it all. You've seen it from the development stage. You've seen it from the design phase. You've seen it from the sales phase. You've seen it from the implementation phase. In the post-pandemic world, what's changed?
I think now it's about emotion. I think it's now about travel. It's about experiences. It really is really about just laying your soul out there for the customers to see. When I say that, I mean the buildings, the architecture, the design. It used to be in luxury travel that we were just interested in the little details, which are so critically important. Today, it's what's going on. Do you swim with the horses?
So we've gone from designer soaps in the bathroom to experience.
Experiences. And it's experience at every level. The food, the wine, it's just fun.
Are you dealing with a more educated traveler?
Well, I think our traveler today is more educated. We love that. That
means they're also more demanding.
They're very demanding, but they're also we operate a hotel called Nihi in Indonesia.
That's with my friend James McBride.
Yeah, he's one of the best.
You know? I knew James when he was at the Ritz-Carlton. Now he just sends me emails that make me jealous because he's sending photos along with him.
Well, you know, when James came to us, he was like, "What happened to me? I went to the end of the earth to build a hotel." And just like you are in the fire world, which we know how exciting and everyone loves that world of how you give, we'd like to give back. And I would say in the luxury hotel world, you got to have a give back. It's got to be true. It's got to be authentic. And you got to have great experiences.
One of the things I noticed during the pandemic, actually, I didn't even notice it during the pandemic. I've been noticing it now because I realize things have changed, is people made a decision that, you know what, the pandemic brought them a little bit closer to their own sense of mortality. And they said, you know what, I'm taking the bucket list, I'm burning it, number one. Number two, I'm not going to be that enamored of luxury goods. I'm not going to necessarily buy a new car this year or maybe buy an expensive electronic item, but I am going to buy experiences. And so when the doors opened up and countries opened up, they came racing out with no price sensitivity whatsoever, saying, I don't care what it costs, I'm going there.
Yeah, but it's important, though, that you don't take advantage of that, right? And I think that's luxury. I think luxury is not to raise the prices through the moon just because you had a couple tough months. I think luxury is giving your customer more than they ever expected.
Okay, so the challenge is, since you've opened that door, is where's the point of no return? Because the attempt is, when the accountants run the asylum, to say, okay, we're going to recoup all the losses and charge Chris. Or the airlines are going to raise fares to make up for a bad quarter. So where do you come to that stabilizing factor?
Well, I think if you can get the people to work with you, the staff and the employees and everything, to give them a little more love and really make sure that their experience is terrific and with authenticity. And I think if you charge them in certain areas where they realize they feel like they have to do it, I think you can balance this stuff really well. But I think we as an organization, all of our team, like we're James, who's amazing, is we just don't go as high as we possibly can. We play the long game. And I think the long game keeps you busy in the slow times of the world.
Because people will trust it.
They really trust it, yeah.
Although everywhere I go now, and I'll make you the exception, but everywhere I go, I've seen hotels getting higher rates than they've ever gotten before. Airline fares are about a historic high, right? Cruise lines are going to get there. But those two first segments, right, hotels and airlines, I mean, it costs more money to fly from New York to Chicago than it used to cost to go from New York to Beirut.
I know, it's shocking. But it's the people want the experiences. They want the memories. I mean, if you really look at what's happened in life since the pandemic, we all sat at home and we were like, I wish I had, I wish I had, I wish I had. And I think what happened was we said, look, I don't need another Gucci handbag. You know, I'm in the fashion apparel business.
I found that surprising coming from you.
I was fortunate to create Tory Burch with my ex-wife, great person, and I have a lot of fashion brands, and we're still selling like a numerous amount. But, you know, a little bit of those dollars now are transferring over where that customer is coming in and saying, I want the experience of a lifetime.
Wow. I never thought I'd hear you say the handbag deal.
I know.
But that's what's happening, though.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
So, okay, so I'm knocking at your door. I'm saying, okay, Chris, I want a different experience. What are you going to be in the post-pandemic world? How do you define that?
I think it's really, really important in the luxury sector that we give them a lot more than they had before. I think you just got to give them better staffing, better people working really hard around the people. You got to give them horses swimming in the water with you. You've got to create new experiences, and you've got to go to places and locations where they've never been before. And that's kind of what we do. That doesn't mean that there's not great hotels around the world that are more cookie cutter. But what we want is that person to experience, feel, touch, and emote what's going on.
And be consistent with the neighborhood and the community.
100%. Most important. I've said, really, Peter, one thing we do in NEHE is we have the Samba Foundation, and that foundation is amazing. And the whole key to it is that we give back to the community. And what's most important is our guests give back to that community, and they give back very large. And where in the world do you think you could have a hotel where your guests that come there and pay $2,000 a night, $1,500 a night are giving back?
And happy to do it.
They love it.
Let's go back to staffing, because in the real world of the hospitality business, I think one of the problems that the hospitality business had is they didn't do a very good job of letting their staff know that what they were doing was a profession and not just a job. And when the pandemic hit, a lot of people then, it was a reset for them. Okay, I'm going to reevaluate my life. I'm going to reevaluate where I live. I'm going to reevaluate what kind of work I do. And you saw a mass exodus.
Well, I think you've seen that in every area of yeah. business. Every single one of my companies now is having trouble. And I think now it's where what I like to say is first comes the customer, right? So first comes that traveler. Second comes your staff. You got to make them part of the solution. You got to make them feel good about what they're doing. You got to make them feel positive all the time. You can't beat them up. And I think now it's more of a collaboration with people than it was before.
But you also have to help them redefine it as not a job but a profession.
Yeah, it's a profession, that's for sure.
And I mean, if you and I were going to dinner tonight in Italy at a restaurant, that waiter, chances are his father did it before him. It's a job he loves. He's proud of being that waiter. He does it better than anybody else. You go to New York, I'll take you to dinner in New York. It's an out-of-work actress waiting for a phone call.
100%. And the restaurants that do it well and have those professional waiters like Joe Stone Crab in Miami. You walk in there, those guys have been around a long time.
Yes, but let me tell you something. Those guys have summer homes in Saint-Tropez.
Yes, they do.
because they're well compensated.
Very well compensated.
Oh, my God. I remember the original maitre d' there. He's since passed away. I mean, this guy literally, I think, had summer homes all over the world because people wanted to have that relationship with him. They wanted to have that conversation with him, and they tipped him lavishly to get those tables. But the point is, the longevity of the wait staff there is 20 and 30 years.
So what do you think is going to happen, Peter? I'd love your opinion. What do you think is going to happen? We're in a new world where it's getting really difficult to get people to come to work. We're in a world where people say, look, I don't want to put my shoes on. I heard a great podcast on American Life about that. They're just saying, I'm tired. What have you found as you go out there?
Well, what I found is not particularly pleasing. I think you're going to see, it's not just about consolidation in the business. Not just airlines and hotels and cruise lines, we're going to see a consolidation in the segmentation of the business, meaning low-end budget will do great. High-end will do great. The middle has nowhere to go. And, I mean, I'm not going to single out any particular brand, but I'll use it as an example. I mean, you talk about emotional connection. How many people, honestly, and please understand I'm not dumping on one hotel brand, I'm just using it as an example, but how many people wake up in the morning excited about staying at a Sheraton?
I think it's hard.
It is. And if you're running a Sheraton, your challenge is to how to make that emotional connection happen when the hotel hasn't been defined that way.
And I think you're going to look it. If I was in the middle market, I think I'd be concerned because it's going to be very hard. We know that the points was the major way people would go, and they would get excited. I remember going down to, I don't know if it was Puerto Rico or someplace, and all the people were on Marriott points, and they had saved up all their points, and they went on their Marriott vacation. They went to a gorgeous place, and they really enjoyed it, and it was great, and they look forward to that for the whole year. Is that going to continue if the staff is not there to do it? I don't think so.
Luxury travel right now seems almost endless, but can it be sustained?
I don't think so. I think luxury travel will always be sustained, but will it be sustained at this price point? I don't think so. I think we're going to need a resetting. And I think, Peter, during the break, we had a great conversation where you said to me, you know, we have a lot of debt out there, and we have the pandemic, lots of people got lots of money, and they're going to spend it down. And at some point, they're not going to have that capital. So I think us in the luxury business, we've got to keep working harder and harder to find ways to make a profit without raising rates and without hurting the customer.
And without hurting the brand.
You never hurt the brand. But
you've seen examples where the brand gets redefined. It goes from a 5-star to a 4-star because the accountants run the asylum, and next thing you know, they lose their core audience.
I agree.
So where do you see things happening now? Because There's no doubt about the fact that travel is one of the largest industries in the world. It's one out of every 10 jobs. Before the pandemic, it was one out of every 5 new jobs. That's how strong it was. But first, you got to get your staff back. Second of all, it's not a question of getting the customers back. It's giving them something that they understand from a definitional point of view that they want to come back to.
Well, I think, look, I can tell you because of fashion, well, we're able to attract great people in fashion. And that's an industry that you stand on your feet all day. If you have a great brand and you create new brands, so a good example is I think the next new brands are going to be ones with not as many people but have the experiences and are good looking and are all rebuilt. So where can you offer a $500 experience instead of a $3,000 experience? How do you build that more reasonably? So I see the whole marketplace going where we're going to have to find ways in which we do a better job when we build it. How do we take care of it? How do we get materials that are both sustainable? How do we have our guests give back to our charities? And then how do we get our employees to feel part of this bigger mission? And I certainly know when you have 200 hotels, it's very hard for anyone to think about a bigger mission. It's a lot easier if you have 1, 2, 10, or 20 hotels.
Exactly. So scaling it is not the answer.
Not the answer.
Although we live in a world of scaling.
I know.
I mean, I was at a meeting one day with a lot of hoteliers, and I went up on stage and I said, okay, how many brands does Marriott have? Does anybody know? One person raised their hand. I said, how many? He said, 32. I said, great. Can you name them? And he said, yes. I said, and who do you work for? Marriott. Okay, so can you name them? He did. And then I said, okay, we're not done yet. Can you define them? And he couldn't. Because they're oversaturating the market in many cases, where you're going to have a different brand on every corner saying, oh, we'll
try. So what do we do? What about it? The biggest problem, Peter, which are points? What do you think about the fact that we have millions and millions and trillions of points standing out there and all of us want to use it and we don't know what to do with them?
Well, I can tell you from personal experience, I don't know what to do with them. I have 23 million miles, okay? Isn't that exciting? I can frame them. I can photograph them. But if I want to go somewhere tomorrow, every plane is full, and the basic model that the airlines are following doesn't want to displace a revenue passenger to reward me for my what? My loyalty. What's the point of a loyalty program that doesn't reward you for your loyalty? That's why they started. Now they're the biggest cash cows the airlines have. The airlines make more money from their frequent flyer programs than they make as operating airlines.
Yeah, it's incredible.
And there's no end to it. Do you know how many unredeemed frequent flyer miles there are in the world right now that have been earned but unable to be redeemed?
23 trillion.
You're not going to the showcase showdown, I'm sorry. It's 34 trillion.
Not bad.
Most people say billions. Yeah, not bad. But think of that number. Get your arms around that number and tell me if there's an end in game, if there's an end in sight.
And they're carrying them on their balance sheet.
They're carrying them on their balance sheet, but they're so valuable to them because they know when they give you the miles that the redemption level is only 8%. Mafia loan sharks don't get this rate of return. Right, so it's the best game ever played because they also control the redemption. Under deregulation, there's no government oversight to say, all right, Mr. Burt, you have a frequent stay program? Well, start paying these people back. They don't have to. So you tell me the answer.
It's very simple. I think and I would say to American Express, Visa, MasterCharge, all the companies, give the people a good way to get great product at a great price, other than just travel miles.
So we're not back to SNH green stamps then.
Yeah, let's go back to the old way. Let's buy some TV with like, you know, a million points or half a million points.
Let's do that.
I don't want the travel. I know, me too.
You and I are old enough to remember I was sitting in my mom's kitchen licking stamps into the SNH green stamp book so we could get a toaster.
Exactly. Let's go back to the toaster.
We'll talk about that. Let's go back to the, you know what? That's the new model. Let's go back to the toaster. You know why? Because people can actually, it's tangible. People can hold it. They can toast it. As opposed to say how many miles that you have that you can't redeem. What changes have you made in your hotel as a direct result of these changes in traveler behavior that are going to sustain you?
we're in a very unique situation that our labor costs is not one of our biggest issues. I think the changes we made is how can we give more back to our customers when they come, and how do we make sure our staff is emotionally involved with our customer. And so as we open up new hotels around the world and as we look at new hotels, I want to make that experience extraordinarily unique and differently. So for me, it's really about getting the people that work for us to get involved with the customers. And that's important, I think.
My thanks to Chris. Now, if you want to know where travel or the travel industry is going, or perhaps more appropriately, where it's not going, just check in with Matthew Upchurch, the CEO of Virtuoso. And I did just that.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than just a car. It's the two-door coupe that was there for your first drive. The hatchback that took you cross-country and back. And the minivan that tackles the weekly carpool. For the cars you couldn't live without, trust Amica Auto Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Matthew, welcome back.
Thanks for having me again, Peter.
Now, it's one thing to say you're having a summit to talk about global travel, but you can't have a summit without talking about global travel, simply because it's one of the largest industries in the world, and it continues to be that. And the thing that surprised me, and tell me if it surprised you, I admit here on the air that I was wrong. I went on the air last August and said, you know what, when Labor Day rolls around, kids go back to school, the demand will drop off, fares will stabilize, you know, things will become more affordable. Boy, was I wrong. It didn't drop off. It stayed just as strong because people had changed the way they approached work, about the way they approached seasonality, and all the algorithms that the airlines, and the airlines were sort of wrong too, they didn't expect it, and all the algorithms that the airlines were using to either project demand or set prices, they had to be like thrown out because this is, you know, they usually measure things year over year. There wasn't any year over year to measure it against because it was a brave new world, right?
You're absolutely right. And, you know, it's interesting when you say that because one of the things I've talked a lot about is that disruptions accelerate trends. And we actually saw this. We saw family travel, for example, just went crazy after 9/11, the financial crisis. Every single disruption has actually, in my opinion, added even more value to, okay, time together, time with family, you know, taking care of yourself, doing something. So I think that, you know, with the pandemic being the mother of all disruptions, you know, I was saying nothing motivates human behavior like having something taken away from you that you took for granted. And we know that there were a lot of fundamental trends below the surface that were the fundamentals that made travel hit its peak in 2019. We have never had, because of the longevity revolution on the baby boomer side, which means that we're about to see the largest growth of 80-year-olds in the history of the planet.
In fact, you gave me a quote one day, which I'm going to remind everybody of, and you said that 80% of all the people who've ever turned 80 are alive today.
Yeah, that's correct.
I mean, that's staggering.
Yeah. No, and what's amazing is, and then you've now got the Gen Z, you know, the Gen Zers and all that. So we have never in the history of the planet have had six generations all traveling at the same time in the numbers they're traveling. Because on the younger side, they have represented and they have been the ones that actually have prioritized experiences over goods, right? So one, you have the longevity revolution. On the other hand, the prioritization of experiences. You have the rise of the rest of the world, right? In other words, the rest of the world. And then you take something away and it's like a big giant slingshot.
And that's what we're seeing right now.
That's exactly what we're seeing. And I think you made a really good point about, we're all amazed. Those of us that have been in this for all this, you really made a really good point about seasonality and all this kind of, I mean, it's out the window. And it's, that one is, I do think is also around the idea that I actually can work from anywhere. right? And people are taking kids out of school and doing this and doing that and working. So it's super interesting to see.
When I was a kid, my parents came up with an idea, which I always thank them for, when there was seasonality, which was they would never travel over Christmas. They would never travel over Thanksgiving. They would never, right? And what they would do is they'd go to my teachers and get them to give me an extra credit assignment and then take me out of school for the week after Thanksgiving or take me out of school for the week after New Year's where there were no crowds and we could actually see a place and experience it. And I loved it because I did an extra credit assignment and we cut a deal. Now you don't have to worry about seasonality. Everybody's doing an extra credit assignment. Right?
I mean, well, you know what? You've never told me that. You know, that explains a lot. you know, kudos to your parents, by the way. Listen, what a brilliant idea.
Listen, I've been doing an extra credit assignment my entire life. Yeah. But seriously, it's how you avoid the crowds.
Yes.
It's how you see a place the way it's meant to be seen at a time when
by the way, it's also the best possible education you could ever get.
Yeah. And that's what we did. Then, of course, I had to do the extra credit assignment. That's another story. But moving on to just changing behavior of travelers. I go back to 2019 when everything was wonderful and nothing could get in the way and then something got in the way. But what got in the way, and I saw this happening, I predicted it, what it would happen. I went on the air and talked about it last October. Everybody thought I was crazy. I wasn't. This is where I was right. The pandemic confronted people with their own mortality.
100%.
And it made them change their bucket list. It made them change their approach to travel. It made them change their approach to their lifestyle, not just their location or where they were going to work or how they were going to work, but what they were going to do with their money. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people decided at that point, and they may not have made a conscious decision, but the decision was made nonetheless, I'm not going to buy a new car. I'm not going to buy new clothes or jewelry. I'm not going to buy expensive electronic items. I'm going to buy experience.
Yeah.
And they came out of the gate roaring, right? And
well, you know, there's actually a very simple explanation of why I think this has happened. We are social animals. I mean, the only reason our species exists is because we're social animals. So, and then you know, wanderlust, the desire to explore, whatever. It's in our DNA. It's you know, hunter gatherers and everything else. I mean, it is literally in our DNA. So, the other thing I think is also added to this is, conscious or not conscious, you know how they say that travel opens your mind, you know, et cetera? Well, there actually is scientific evidence because the way the brain conserves energy is looking for patterns, right? And so when you're in your same routine over and over again, your brain, you know, it's patterned. So whenever you go somewhere and there's different smells, different things, whatever, it literally opens the lens and you literally absorb more.
If you're prepared for it.
If you're prepared for it.
I know. And the other thing that was manifested in this decision that people made was when they stopped buying material things, guess what happened? In October, FedEx is closing 90 of their stores. They're parking planes. When was the last time you heard of FedEx parking planes before the Christmas holiday season? Amazon lays off 18,000 people. And we looked at the Christmas retail sales in January for December. They were stagnant, right? So, but the money is still flowing.
Yeah, during the pandemic, right? We all thought, oh my gosh, look at all these stuff, whatever. It's never going to turn around. And what's hot? I mean, get in a restaurant, travel, go wherever you need to go. I mean, again, we're social animals.
And, you know, I think I know a little bit about airline schedules. I have trouble getting on planes mm-hmm. because they're all full. Mm-hmm. And I'm not just talking about getting in the first class section. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get on the plane.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. And the airlines are adding more seats, which makes it, you know, if the airlines add any more seats, I know where the American Association of Orthopedic Surgeons can have their next convention, on the plane. You like that one?
Yeah.
Okay, good. But the bottom,
it's a little crooked.
Huh? What?
It's a little crooked, right?
Yeah,
orthopedics.
Yeah, I got it. Sorry. Yeah, but the point is, it's the world. Now, the real question that I have to ask you, which I'm asking everybody here at the summit, is when you look at these numbers, mm-hmm. how long can they be sustained?
That is the biggest question of all. And I don't know. I mean, there's coming out of the pandemic, I said we have a minimum of a year. And my prediction at the time was about 4 years that we're going to see this kind of like, you could, a negative term would be bubble because they're bursts, but you're going to see this kind of cushion, right? That was both savings, prioritization, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't know. I do know this though. I'm actually making a big statement about it. Those people that where there's a disconnect between the value, the price, and the service, maintaining, there's going to be
that. Oh, it's coming.
That's coming, right? Because, and it's going to have a negative impact on those that, that kind of took advantage. But right now, what I'm here to speak about the value of human connection.
But before we get to that, let's go back to what you just said about this coming disconnect. Because if you've got a, you have a five-star hotel that doesn't have housekeeping anymore, you've got a problem.
By the way, that's just ridiculous. Anybody who's using the pandemic excuse for not having housekeeping, whatever, be straight about what it is, right? That's just not the case. And by the way, how could it possibly be the case where there are those people, you know, we don't ever select hotels in Virtuoso by brand. Like, we don't accept all of one brand. We literally select them hotel by hotel.
Based on those criteria,
On the things that we know about them, et cetera. But you're right. And there's going to be that's where there's going to be a disconnect.
And the thing is, at a certain point, people will vote with their wallets.
100%. They always do.
Yeah, they haven't lately. They've come out and said, whatever it costs, I'm going, right? Mm-hmm. It's more important to me. I just got to get on that plane. I got to stay at that hotel. Just bill me. Done, right? Mm-hmm. But then they get there, and all of a sudden housekeeping only comes in once every 4 days. Mm-hmm. That does register.
Yeah.
I'm just using housekeeping. There are many other aspects to it as well.
Yeah.
We found a Motel 6 in Santa Barbara that was getting $436 a night, and they were filling the hotel. That's leaving a lot of lights on for me. I mean, my God.
Well, but, I mean, it's supply and demand, as we know.
All right. But at a certain point, common sense prevails. And people are going to wake up and say, did I get value for this? Where's the value proposition? I wanted to go. I didn't want to be denied. I was cooped up. I had to get out there. I needed that. I needed that.
Right.
People don't travel because they want to travel. They travel because they need to travel. I get that part. Right. Travel isn't what you do. It's who you are. So that part about I get. But at a certain point, where they're charging resort fees, or they're not providing housekeeping, or they're nickel and diming everybody, at a certain point at the upscale level, there's going to be disconnect.
Yeah, and you know, actually, I was really thinking about this. You and I always get these great conversations. Again, I don't know what percentage of these prices are kind of a reset, like a permanent reset. But I do think, you know, I love Warren Buffett, because when people say, you know, well, I use a travel advisor, I can get this cheaper. I've always said Warren Buffett has the best answer of all. Price is what you pay, value is what you get. So I think what's going to happen is that there's going to be a bifurcation. There's going to be polarization between those people that are really delivering value and those that are just, you know, getting prices like, well, why not, you know?
Right.
You know. Make hay while the sunshine, I guess they're saying, but there will be a price to pay. But it's interesting. There is one other thing. When you were saying that, though, there is one thing that I've talked about that's coming out of the pandemic. This is the largest service industry in the world, one of the largest industries in the world, as you and I know with our work with WTTC. I mean, at the peak, we were at 365 million people around the world, directly and indirectly employed. I do think there is a bit of a reset on the labor. We need to make this a higher paying
profession.
We've done that with travel advisors and travel agents. And I'm actually talking about in my talk about, there was a GM back in October of 2021 who said, you know, I've got an owner in my hotel that will drop $10 million on a cigar bar, but our salary bands are shocking. And I do think that the days of just like, well, I'm just going to get away with really low wages and things like that. The more enlightened ones are that. I mean, it's not just wages. It's also those travel organizations that are sustainable, not just in financially, but what are they doing for my community? What are they doing for the environment? What are they doing to be responsible citizens? And so I think you're going to see that happening. So I think, and it's not just luxury. I think it's going to be companies that are led by organizations that truly engage their employees in being co-creators of something of value that delivers value and isn't just price.
Which means that for a lot of hotels, or a lot of, not just hotels, a lot of airlines, hotels, cruise lines, you can't just rely upon the name recognition of the brand. You have to be able to justify. You can't justify your rates if you don't deliver the service.
Yeah, and again, that's what. And unfortunately, sometimes things are judged by the lowest common denominator. So, But, you know, that's also one of the reasons why we've always believed that, you know, and you and I have talked about this, about, you know, we spend a huge amount of time building personal relationships and having conversations, because I truly believe that when you have those relationships, they actually change and improve the way our travelers travel.
Exactly. But right now, we're watching the accountants take over the asylum during the pandemic. They're still there. So, you know, we have a kiosk mentality. Anytime I see a hotel putting more kiosks in the lobby, I don't want to stay there. I mean, I want the option of conversation.
You know, but to be fair, on that, you and I, we've talked about this before, and I agree. But I will say that one of the things that we're doing is, you know, it depends. Maybe not the kiosk, but on my phone, it depends on what kind of service I'm going to get and what the level of that particular property. I mean, if it's supposed to be a property where I'm there for the totality of the experience, I believe that human beings enhance that if they're properly trained and they really believe in the mission of that particular property or whatever the partner is, whatever the travel provider is. But nothing is actually, I'd rather deal with a kiosk than deal with a frontline person that's working at a company that they're not really happy with.
Okay, I get that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, so there's that.
But then
so
there's an underlying strength that drives travel.
Yeah.
And we don't often recognize it, but it's the emotional connection
100%.
Of that travel experience. And if you have that emotional connection, and so many times because of the conversation, mm-hmm. right? It makes you want to go back.
Yeah.
Because you've established that relationship.
Well, and that's how that is emotion. I mean, emotion really, that's the only thing that generates emotion is people to people. But again, I think that there's so many different levels of products. What we're also talking about is that how can the investment, you know, there's two fundamental ways of applying technology. One is to try to get rid as many human beings as possible.
And we're seeing that.
Right, but the other is to utilize technology to amplify it, to allow you to invest and allow the human beings in your organization, your people, to actually spend more time doing things that are human.
My thanks to Matthew. Alan Furstman has a long history in the hotel business, and it allowed him to create, from the ground up, Montage Hotels. But he doesn't just wear the CEO hat. He has a few issues as a guest, and he'd like to share those with you and perhaps the rest of the industry. Mr. Alan Furstman, how are you, sir?
I'm great, Peter. So great to be with you.
I mean, you and I go back, I believe, to the opening of the Bellagio.
I think even before that, when I was running the Phoenician Resort in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Oh, my goodness. With Keating?
Post-Keating.
Post-Keating, and you were there.
I was there post-Keating and in the mid-90s before I opened Bellagio.
Okay, for those people who aren't old enough to remember this, this is the old days of the Lincoln Savings and Loan and the great disaster and the Savings and Loan debacle. And at one point, the Phoenician and many other hotels were actually being managed and owned by the federal government.
The RTC, yeah.
The Resolution Trust Corporation.
Exactly.
And what do they know about hotels? Nothing.
No. When the RTC sold it, ITT Sheraton purchased it and created the Luxury Collection, of which I became president of the Phoenician and a group of luxury hotels that I oversaw.
And by the way, despite Keating's problems, which put him in jail, it was a great hotel.
Built an amazing resort.
Yeah. Yeah. It still is.
It is, and when I ran it in the mid-90s, it was arguably the top resort in North America.
Unreal. So now, here you are at Montage, and I have to say, I've stayed at almost every one of your hotels, not necessarily by design, it just happened to be that way. And some of your hotels that I've stayed at, I mean, the Montage in Los Cabos, unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, the location of that hotel on that beach, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's perhaps one of the only swimmable beaches, and the rap on Cabo had been
you can't swim.
A little too rough, but we sit on Santa Maria Bay, so we have a fully swimmable beach, which makes it just a great destination for individual travelers as well as families.
Let's talk about the world of hospitality in the post-pandemic world, because we're seeing hotels now that, and by the way, I was wrong about this. I thought that when last September rolled around and kids would go back to school, that the, you know, demand would drop and the rates would stabilize. That did not happen, right? The demand stayed just as strong. I think you'd admit you're getting hotel rates now that you haven't had in decades. And you're not alone. It's the industry itself is having that, especially above a certain price point.
Yep.
The real question is, who's coming? How are they paying for it? And can they sustain it?
Yes, yes, and look, the affluent consumer is traveling and looking for great experiences, and providing great experiences and a differentiated product, as we try to do, is really been incredibly appealing for the guests, and we see the repeat nature of our business stronger than ever, and we see. Just the evolution or continuation of longer-term stays, multi-generational travel.
They're combining, they're doing, I hate to use the word bleisure, but they are, right? They're combining business with extra days.
Well, you don't have to be in the office.
Yeah.
One of the outcomes of the pandemic was you could be effective working anywhere. And
so yes, not a good time to be in commercial office real estate.
Well, I think what you're seeing in the commercial office space is what was 5 days a week or 4.5 days a week is shrinks down a little bit, and to extend another day of vacation or another day of, you know, working from location.
And we've seen instances where CEOs are saying to their employees, all right, everybody comes back to work or you lose your job. And these guys will say, see ya.
Well, yeah, there's obviously there's been some of that, but the reality is you need both. You need the connectivity of an office environment to grow a culture of a company. And
to have fully, conversations.
Exactly. And think of young workers starting out. So much of the mentorship happens in a personal
around
relationship.
The office cooler.
Exactly. So I think it's important. I think some of that's been missing. But for an experienced company or experienced people within a company to be working on location sporadically or a few days a week, it becomes less of a challenge. And at the hotels, we become beneficiaries of that, where you can combine the getaway with some office productivity.
So in a way, I'm thinking sort of the psychographics of this. People are no longer looking at hotels as a place to get away, but they're also looking to it as maybe a second home.
Well, we've seen quite a bit of that. All the Montage hotels have a residential component to it. Combining the resort lifestyle with a residence is for many the ultimate. We really can enjoy the lifestyle while you're not working in a way that living in a straight residential building can't provide.
And somebody makes the bed.
Absolutely.
If you can keep the housekeepers.
If you keep the housekeepers, which of course we all, and on the luxury side of the world.
Exactly.
That hasn't changed.
We know people are spending more time away from home. They're spending more time in your hotels. And they're not necessarily price sensitive. They're spending whatever it costs, right? But are their demands changing? Are their expectations changing? Are they saying, okay, if I'm going to stay there, this is what I want? I'm not just talking about your hotels, in the industry in general.
I think in general, the luxury consumer is looking for a sense of discovery. I think they're looking for a real sense of place. If you think back luxury hotels 20, 25 years ago, there was a cookie-cutter approach. You might see the same hotel in Hawaii that you would see in Boston, same interior design, for example. I don't think that's acceptable anymore. I think the sense and spirit of place is an important component.
A hotel has to have its own personality.
Absolutely. Now, what can translate is a style of service. So when I created Montage, it was to get rid of the pretentiousness that was a part of old world luxury and try and integrate a much more gracious and humble approach to luxury. And that's what we tried to do. But
from a design point of view, no two of your hotels are alike.
No, they have to capture an essence of the place where you know, pay homage to the locales.
And then, of course, there's what every hotelier wants is the emotional connection with your guests.
Yeah, ultimately that is what defines the experience of the hotel. And when someone asks about a Montage experience, it's not about the physical. It's not the bricks and mortar. It's not the great designs. I mean, they're amazing. But what they remember, what they talk to me about, is how they connected with our associates, how they were made to feel, the personalization of the service, the sincerity of the service, the real passion in which our associates deliver service.
I got to ask you a design question.
Sure.
And I want you to take off your CEO hat, put on your guest hat for a second, okay? What's the one thing you hate the most about hotels?
As a guest. From a design perspective?
Yeah.
Lighting that's inappropriate.
Thank you. Okay, you win. That's it for me. hotel designers, I'm convinced, have never stayed in a hotel because they trap you with mood lighting. You don't change your lifestyle when you change your location. You want to be able to read in your room. You want to be able to think in your room. And if you want the lights to go down, you want that as your option.
Yeah, and look, lighting's evolved in the last 5 to 10 years more than ever with the LED, with the onset of LED. And the old ways of setting lighting have changed. And when you design hotels now, lighting can be art. And when we look at our Pendry in New York, for example, we had an incredible lighting designer that oversaw that project. And as you enjoy the building, you the moods that are being sent, how you're made to feel, is very much driven by the incredible lighting throughout the hotel.
That's a lot in the public spaces, but in the guest rooms.
And the guest room has to be easy to use.
Thank you. How about on and off? Does that work?
It's very frustrating when you cannot find the light switches to turn off in a hotel room. You're in bed and you're trying to figure out, oh my gosh, I couldn't get that one off. And it can
I
be frustrating.
I once asked Bill Marriott a question. I said, look, you're the CEO of Marriott. I'm assuming you're staying in suites all the time. And he said, absolutely not. I said, what, you don't stay in suites? He said, no. I said, why? He says, too many light switches to turn off. That was his answer. And you know what? It made sense.
Yeah, it's what happens. Technology in general is something that I had a way of looking at it in that if my mother couldn't figure out how to use it, we're not ready to be the exclusive way we do it. Now, the best example was we got these great iPad-type devices to put the room service menus on. And one of our hotels, we'd put them on that and got rid of the paper menus. And, only maybe 75% could use it. What about the other 25% that aren't comfortable with the technology? So the easy solution is you have both available until that becomes the norm and where everybody...
But you had to learn that.
We had to learn that. And we learned it the hard way.
Is, if I'm checking into a hotel room and it takes me 55 minutes to program the remote, something's wrong.
Exactly. It's got to be intuitive and easy to use. And so we it's just attention to detail. It's nothing more than that. And if we stay focused on that, we can provide an easy experience for our guests.
Okay, I'll give you one more. I judge a hotel by the bathroom, by the guest bathroom, because you spend more waking hours in that room than any other room in the hotel. And if the bathroom works, the rest of the hotel is going to work, right? So people who design hotel bathrooms don't understand lighting either, number one. Number two, they don't understand space. And I know I'm being gender specific here, but I'll address my wife. There are search and rescue teams trying to figure out what she packs that she needs to put on the kitchen bathroom sink, right? And then last but not least is who gave them this idea? I think it was a very cruel tort lawyer who told them that you have to put marble floors in the bathroom.
Yeah. So look, slip coefficient, for obvious reasons, you need to have the right surfacing.
Right.
So it's safe for all our guests. Your point about... The vanity, the countertop, sometimes you're space constrained. But when that happens, add a shelf component of it. That makes it possible. But we build model rooms for every hotel we design. And then
Do you sleep in them?
We don't necessarily always have running water in them, but we spend a lot of time going through every inch of the room, and we make the modifications as if you're living in it, and it makes all the difference in the world. That's where we catch not enough space on the vanity. That's where we catch some of the comforts that need to be there. Water pressure in a shower is important. I mean, how many?
Oh my God!
Every once in a while,
one of my biggest pet peeves.
Yeah.
My thanks to Alan, to Matthew Upchurch, to Chris Birch. And my thanks to you for listening to this Ion Travel podcast. For more conversations with the world's leaders in travel, as well as answers to your travel questions, be sure to rate and review this podcast wherever you happen to listen to podcasts. And for all the breaking travel news, by now I think you know what to do. Just log on to petergreenberg.com.
The Ion Travel podcast is produced by Amanda Morris and Anthony Protis Chung. For more content from Peter Greenberg and the Ion Travel team, visit petergreenberg.com. Ion Travel is a production of CBS News Radio.
If you like Ion Travel with Peter Greenberg, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
The Hargan women seem to have it all.
From the outside looking in, we were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But as detectives would soon learn, there was a lot going on inside the Hargan household.
Ashley and I have been calling my mom and the house and Helen. Okay. No one's answering.
63-year-old Pamela Hargan gunned down in her own home. Her youngest daughter, Helen, lay dead upstairs.
Patrol, when they arrived, assumed or thought that there might have been a murder-suicide.
But for the detectives on the scene,
there were things about the scene itself that were concerning to us on day one.
Who would want to kill their mother and their little sister?
There is no boogeyman here. It is exactly who we think it is.
I'm Peter Van Sant from 48 Hours. This is Blood is Thicker, the Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, the Hargan Family Killings, starting May 8th, wherever you get your podcasts.